You're listening to The Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer. Now live in the studio, local mortgage and finance experts Tina Mitchell and Mike Mercer.
Welcome to The Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer, the Saturday, November 3rd show. I'm Tina Mitchell, Mortgage Diva, and sitting to my left is my co-host, the Mortgage Master, Mike Mercer.
Good afternoon to you, Tina.
It's going to be an awesome show.
I'm really excited about our guest today.
Thank you for taking time with us to talk money. Mike and I are here every Saturday on AM 1090 at 3 o'clock. Our goal is to keep you up to date on the latest news and trends in our local economy. Keep us tuned in, and we will definitely keep you informed on everything money. Mike, why don't you introduce who we have in studio today?
Well, Tina, we've got Tyler McKenzie with us from Windermere Real Estate, and he's going to be discussing the state of the residential market in the urban Seattle metropolitan area. And then we also have Rich Keel, who is a partner with Generation Wealth, and he's going to be discussing what the heck is wrong with Wall Street. So two great topics, two great guests. I'm excited for the show.
And why don't we start it out with some money chat?
Let's do some money chat. So Tina, the article that I wanted to touch on today, kind of interesting because you and I were sitting in the office yesterday talking with a realtor about this exact same topic. And this article was from Mortgage News Daily, and it was written by a guy named Julian Hebron. He's a loan officer with RPM Mortgage in San Francisco. But the title of the article was "Why the Jumbo Loan Market is Finally Thawing." And you know, we were talking with this agent yesterday, and she specializes in home prices anywhere from 800 to 3 million. So the topic was the hoops that some of her clients are having to jump through, as we know as well, just to be able to get a loan. So currently, you know, the housing recovery kind of centers around two main themes, is what he talks about in this article. You know, one is slightly improving stats on home sales, prices, and foreclosures. But the second thing is low rates versus what he would call tight credit. And as far as the two themes go, he kind of focuses on the second because it really feeds into the first. And, you know, when you talk about tight credit on kind of a broad macro, there's a lot of broad macro assertions about tight credit. But, you know, the press rarely details the kind of loan guidelines that, you know, consumers are having to face on kind of the ground level, which, you know, of course, you and I deal with every day. Mm-hmm. So in kind of looking at how the loan guidelines will impact credit availability, especially in the jumbo market, it's interesting. So I kind of want to touch on a couple of things. Now, for those of you who may or may not know, conforming loans in our area are anything up to 417. And then you kind of have this between 417 and 506. We kind of call it high balance. So it's not quite really jumbo yet, right? And then, of course, once you get above 506 in our area, and some areas like San Francisco, that number is 625, that's where we start talking about jumbo loans, right? And which is where the guidelines can kind of change, the interest rates can change. There's all different kinds of parameters.
Even though FHA, you can buy an FHA jumbo all the way up to 567,500.
That is true.
Pretty amazing.
So as far as the jumbo goes, one of the biggest things, and again, we were talking about this yesterday, is unsourced deposits, right? So, and the standard kind of procedures, at least with this gentleman's bank, was that they really are going to source anything that's over $1,000 deposit.
And for somebody that's buying a $2 million home with a 20-30% down payment is going, are you serious? That's
absolutely
an insult.
It's an insult because a lot of these people in the jumbo market, let's face it, they've got excellent credit. Financially, they do very well. Oftentimes, they have enough cash in the bank where they could just buy the home outright if they wanted to. And then here we are asking them and probably annoying them, right, to get documentation after documentation, documentation. So we kind of want to go and explain why that is and why it's still kind of a, although it's a pain in the butt, it's still a good thing. So, but he has an interesting story, this loan officer. So he was talking about a client that he had, and they needed to source deposits of a total of $8,111.13, okay? So they ended up sourcing two checks. And this guy, now, this guy's buying over $1 million home. So they wanted to source these two checks. So they had one check that they sourced for $59.65.84. Okay, then the second check was for $2,145.04. Now, you might ask, okay, that sounds pretty good. But here's the thing, Tina. There was 25 cents.
Difference?
There was 25 cents when you added those two numbers together that they were off by.
Mm-hmm.
So the loan officer was sitting there going, how am I going to go back to my high net worth client and tell him that we have an issue over 25 cents. So he goes on to talk about the story. So the story is great. So he basically they go back to the underwriter and they go, you got to be kidding me, right? And the underwriter goes, look, we've got to deposit, we got to show proof of everything. So his team, kind of they elaborate over this over the next day or so, going, how?
Because I'm waiting to see where did that 25 cents come from?
Right.
Because math is math. It all has to match up.
Right. And they're short 25 cents. So, arguing with the underwriter, he didn't get anywhere. So basically he finally has to go back to his client and tell him about this missing quarter. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out that the client had received a 25 cent dividend check.
Of course, there's always something.
And had commingled it in and just, uh-huh. So it just kind of got forgotten about. So, but that's kind of the level of the detail that jumbo investors are requiring, right? Us, to get so that they can basically buy the loans from the lenders,
mm-hmm.
right? It's not coming from us.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming from who's going to buy the loans once we package it and want to sell them, right?
And the people that are buying the loans, if they don't meet those requirements, they won't be able to lend anymore. So it's all coming from a bigger place.
That's right. Right. And he kind of went on and said, the ability for lenders of all, of all sizes to be able to sell loans, it's critical for, if we're going to do this, that's the way that interest rates are going to remain very competitive throughout the U.S. with this,
mm-hmm,
right? So,
mm-hmm.
And then he talked about, the liquidity of Fannie and Freddie, Ginnie Mae and FHA loans as well. But, for lenders, it enables lenders to be able to keep making new loans and to keep the rates low.
Mm-hmm.
So even though lenders that are doing, even though lenders have been doing jumbo loans since 2008, you got to realize that most of these loans have been kept on those lenders' balance sheets, right? They haven't been able to really sell them.
Release them. Yeah.
Which is why
they're selling them on the secondary market.
Right. Which is why the rates up till now have been kind of high on that product. So, but, the good news is that, that the non-agency market is definitely thawing out. The better news is that because it's thawing out, what will end up happening is that where you might have seen a pricing spread between conventional and jumbo, where it could have even been an eighth of a point higher.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about it, over the last couple of years, sometimes even 7/8, now it's coming back down to where it might be, 3/8 higher, 5/8 higher, depending upon, of course, credit score and how much money they're putting down on the loan. But because of that, that's what's enabled, these tighter lending guidelines are the main reason why interest rates on jumbo loans are now starting to come back. So although this is kind of a slow, painful reverse of what things have been like in the past, where lending was very loose, so to speak. Guidelines weren't really there. We're doing a full circle back again. And yes, it's painful. It's not enjoyable for our borrowers to have to deal with this. It really is the best thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you've had any experience. I mean, I know you've written some jumbo loans lately. Anything that you might want to share with that in regards to some of the stuff you've had to jump through hoops?
Well, I'm just happy to see that it's back. And I think for you and I, just having a conversation with a client when they come in and just explaining to them why this is happening, just like you said, that's why rates are so low. That's why jumbo financing is available. That's why you can get in to these properties. And it's not the underwriter that's requiring this, but it's a secondary market. And without these requirements, the financing will no longer be available. So I think if everybody understands, and if there's precaution ahead of time, the biggest inconvenience, and it's funny, questions that come up, issues that come up with clients, they're the same thing over and over and over again. And if you just listen to what your clients are irritated about, and it's all around funds to close.
Right.
And so if you have that conversation early that, look, it's kind of funny if you look back afterwards, it's funny. It's not during the process that you're going through it, unless you know ahead of time that any money that's being moved around has to be documented. And all the funds can be documented. It's not that they can't document that 25 cents. It was just a real inconvenience. And
right.
The numbers have to match up. And so I think if you have that conversation and you set realistic expectations, then clients understand and they can kind of laugh through the process and go, oh yeah, you told me about that. Let me figure out where that 25 cents came from. So if you look back in the market, jumbo loans all but shut down after the recession. And in 2010 is when they started rebounding and coming back. And now we're seeing about 15% of the market is jumbo financing.
Right.
So it's exciting to see that we've got that money back. We're able to play hard in that arena and help people get into higher end homes.
Right. And not to recap what we've talked about over and over again, but think about why, if you think about the global financial crisis that started in the first place, right? These loans, like I had mentioned earlier, were made with little to no guidelines. Mortgage securities and derivatives, therefore, the home prices dropped, loans went bad, the securities followed, and then the global financial system and economy just went sideways. But in closing, the thing to remember is that there's a difference between tight credit and tight guidelines. And, tight credit is when, you can't get a loan with favorable terms. Mm-hmm. That's tight credit. Tight guidelines is when you can get a loan, but it's just going to take some work and some patience to get it done, right? So not to make any mistakes, he went on to kind of talk about, this was an 80% loan to value. The guy was putting 20% down. It was almost a million five purchase price. Mm-hmm. So it's a good chunk of change. But at the end of the day, these types of, if we can get
and
through.
And a 20% down payment on $1.5 million, that is actually a huge risk for an investor, especially in this environment, because a little bit of movement in the market is going to put that lender in a position of high risk. And so I think we should all look back and feel fortunate that these opportunities are still out there.
Absolutely. So in closing, he basically said, despite the short-term pain, the long-term benefits are going to be there absolutely for everybody. Right?
Now, here's the only side of it that I think is really unfair for the high-end buyers, and actually not high-end or low-end, it doesn't matter, is when we got into a stated income loan environment, which was really needed in the market for self-employed buyers. And I don't know what the percentage would be. We can actually ask our financial expert when he comes on later on what the percentage of people in our local economy here are self-employed. But I would imagine there's a lot of them. And the stated income loans were opened up specifically for buyers that were self-employed. They had strong credit. They weren't first-time home buyers. Mm-hmm. They were coming in with a substantial, meaning 20% down,
right,
which really isn't substantial,
right, but they had assets.
They had a little bit of assets. Yep. They had 6 months of reserves in payments. And so if they met those minimum requirements, then you could go off of a stated or look at their bank statements to see money coming into their account, which that made real sense. Now that those programs are completely gone, and good for good reason, because once they opened it up to W-2 employees, look what happened to her.
Abused,
I mean, that
yeah.
was just like ridiculous. So I don't see those coming back in the near future, which is really unfortunate, because there are so many people that can have such a huge impact on our economy, especially in the higher end price range, if they could open back up those stated income. So I feel fortunate for what we have. I just wish that there could be a little tweaking on that. And I think that's a far way off because of the abuse that happened.
Right. And I think over the next couple of years, things will start to kind of hopefully come back a little bit, and mm-hmm. they'll go back to a little bit more common sense underwriting. But for now, that's definitely the position that we're stuck in.
Yep.
It is a pain in the butt, but again, at the end of the day, it's all about we have money to lend, right? Which we
yes.
didn't. And not only do we have money to lend, we have money.
Very cheap.
We have money to lend at really low
interest
rates.
You want to say high 3% interest rate for a 30-year fix on $1 million loan? Are you serious? It's ridiculous.
Yeah. So what do you have for us?
Well, I want to talk a little bit about Bank of America CEO and get his opinion on our real estate market.
Right.
Bank of America's Brian Moynihan from Charlotte, North Carolina, here in Tokyo, Japan, to tell the world about the American growth story, which I have to say he describes as a bright spot in the global economy. I asked him specifically about housing. As you know, it's been sort of a black eye for Bank of America with losses tied to mortgages from Countrywide. Here's what he says about the state of housing right now.
Everything we see points that the worst is over. From the amount of delinquent loans, the amount of seriously delinquent loans, the backlog of homes that are still going through the process. But if you step back, what have we been about over the last several years? We've been about helping all the borrowers we can through the modification processes and all the programs put in place.
Hmm.
And as we get through those processes, you're starting to see the mortgage market or the home markets heal around the country.
Pretty clear there. Brian Moynihan saying, by all accounts, the worst is over for the housing market, and he is working to increase Bank of America's share in mortgage lending. Right now, they're number four.
30,000 jobs lost. All of us in the studio shaking our head. I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
Let's talk a couple points that he made. Delinquent loans dropping. Lender Processing Services, the company that reports on mortgage delinquencies and foreclosures, announced that the month-over-month change in delinquency rate increased by 7.72%. Now, Lender Processing Services covers approximately 70% of the overall mortgage market, and their data is based on loans that are 30 days past due. Now, I always talk about 90-day delinquent. This is 30 days, so there are a chance that people are 30 days behind on their mortgage that they're going to recover. Once you get into the 90-day, little different story there, but current stands at 7.40 and is much lower than the 10.57 seen in January 2010, but we're not in a full recovery yet. So that would be my answer on his delinquent loans, or my opinion on his delinquent loans dropping. Now, when he also mentioned the backlog of homes are down, the percentage of loans in the process of foreclosure has declined to 3.87% from the 4.04 in August and 4.18 from a year ago. So yes, they have dropped. National Mortgage Settlement Act, because of that, which we've brought into studio a few times, one of the components of the National Mortgage Settlement Act was for them to make it easier for people to be able to short sale on their property. So they're not getting in the calculation for foreclosures, because they're actually having more short sales going through the process. Now, there are still 3.7 million properties 30 days past due. Even worse, 1.5 million properties that are 90 days in delinquent. So just ask yourself the question, if a homeowner is 90 days in delinquent, what are the chances they're going to be able to keep their home? Now, the argument to that would be with all the modifications. So it's going to be interesting to see all of the play out, because we've brought in studio as well some of the lawsuits and some of that are happening right now with some of the major lenders. But overall, there are roughly 5.6 million delinquent properties, and only 1.9 million of them are in foreclosure. So has it helped the home prices? Absolutely, it has, which we've talked about before, because of the shortage of inventory and what the industry calls shadow inventory. The other thing to consider that no one really talks about is all the adjustable rate mortgages that are out there. That, again, the protection from this part of the risk coming back onto the market is possible modifications. But all of these adjustable rate mortgages that actually have adjusted, they adjusted based on this interest rate environment that we're in right now, which is crazy, crazy, crazy low.
Yeah.
So what's happened to their interest rates?
It's gone down.
They've actually decreased. Now, here's the thing, is they're only fixed for a year. So those adjustable rate mortgages are going to adjust annually every year until they refinance, or unless they get a permanent modification, which, again, that's kind of a blessing back there that I think it's going to protect a lot of this shadow inventory hitting the market. He also states that Bank of America has been about, over the last several years, helping homeowners keep their homes in the modification. Little bit of a correction. They weren't doing too much in the modification until after March 2012 of this year, where the modification percentages have increased, again, because of the National Mortgage Settlement Act. So there's my comment on Mr. CEO of Bank of America.
Yeah, good stuff.
Now, on that note, I do want to mention one other thing. We've talked a lot about the lawsuits that are going around with all the major banks, and just have read a lot of articles on, there's been a lot of lawsuits with the major banks. It's not just the little people getting hurt anymore. The major banks are getting hit, and they're getting hit pretty hard. But this one I wanted to bring to studio in a little different fashion than I have before. I've talked about Bank of America. We've talked about JP Morgan Chase, some of the big bad guys that are out there and some of the big bad stuff that happened. But I want to mention Wells Fargo. And I know, Mike, in the industry, Wells Fargo is kind of known as one of the safe players.
Mm-hmm.
And wasn't quite as aggressive as some of the other major banks were. Now, Wells Fargo did receive as much as $36 billion in federal aid after the crash and got a massive push from the government to help it buy the dying mega bank Wachovia for $12.7 billion. Wells Fargo not only got $25 billion in TARP funds just before it bought Wachovia, but also received a special tax break from then Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson, which some reports say was worth as much as $25 billion. Now, Wells Fargo just posted a record quarterly profit, which is actually really good, because just like their peers, they're finally getting hit as well. Wells is being sued for fraud in the mortgage markets. The U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York brought a case against them for seeking hundreds of millions of dollars in damages from a decade of fraudulent behavior in which Wells Fargo wrongfully certified more than 100,000 mortgages being eligible for federal mortgage insurance, which is through the Federal Housing Administration, or FHA, paid out millions of dollars in insurance claims on defaulted loans that were falsely certified by Wells Fargo, according to the complaint. Now, here's my thought. Was it Wells Fargo that set up guidelines at a 560 FICO score, at a 50-plus DTI, at a low to minimum, no down payment and no reserves? Actually, Wells Fargo actually put some overlays, like all the other banks did, to where they wouldn't accept those 560 credit scores. So my opinion on that is I think Wells Fargo is getting a little bit screwed on this suit. And I think they're one of the good players. I think all the major banks were part of this mess that we're in. But I feel that this lawsuit is a little ridiculous. Now, here's the other part of the lawsuit, Mike, that you might make you laugh a little bit. They're also part of the suit is because they pay underwriters bonuses for the files. Now, don't we all do that? Don't all companies give bonuses to the underwriters for the more files that they can underwrite to be efficient in the process? So Wells Fargo loan officers or Wells Fargo underwriters that are out there that aren't going to get bonused anymore, I don't think they're going to have any underwriters left at the company. So that's my feedback on the Wells Fargo suit. I really don't like the big players, but I felt a little bad on Wells when I read this.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens. So coming up next on the Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer, Tyler McKinsey with Windermere Real Estate. It's all about the residential real estate market in the Seattle metropolitan area.
Baseball, the national pastime. It's basic, simple. In a time when, for a lot of Americans, many things are not. Your local Allstate agent can help make things a bit easier by saving you money on car insurance. Right off the bat, safe drivers can save up to 25%. Are you in good hands?
Get big league insurance for less. In Seattle, call Allstate agent Brett Stenmo first. Discount subject to terms and availability. Discount amount subject to change. Actual savings vary. Allstate Fire and Casualty Insurance Company, Northbrook, Illinois.
Are you behind on your mortgage payments and unsure about the road ahead? Magnum Law Group helps families just like yours navigate through the foreclosure avoidance process. Are you underwater on your home and unsure what to do? Magnum Law Group will help you understand your options. Are you facing foreclosure and need to stop a trustee sale? Magnum Law Group has success in doing this and may be able to help you too. If you're tired of dealing with the banks and getting turned down for loan modification, Magnum Law Group will take on the banks for you and lead you through the process for the best possible outcome. They lead the competition with superior knowledge and expertise.
This is Craig from Magnum. You can reach us at 425-605-6393 or at www.magnumlawgroup.com. See you at the next seminar.
A leader in the real estate industry amongst peers and in sales, Tyler McKinsey is your expert when it comes to listing or buying a home. The market has turned and buyer competition can be fierce. For sellers, knowing how to position your property for the quickest sale and highest price requires expert guidance. Whether buying or selling, wouldn't you prefer to be in the most professional hands possible?
If you're looking to buy, sell, or just get an expert opinion, give me a call. My name is Tyler McKinsey. I'm with Windermere Real Estate. You can reach me at tylermckenzie.com or call me directly, 206-852-1305. 852-1305. Look forward to hearing from you.
This is the Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer on AM 1090. Now, back to the show with local mortgage and finance experts Dina Mitchell and Mike Mercer.
Welcome back to the Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer here on AM 1090 every Saturday at 3 p.m. sharp. The purpose of our show is to help our listeners understand what's really going on in our local real estate and financial arena. You can reach Tina and me at 1-888-776-1090 or contact us online at themoneyhour.com. Again, that's 1-888-776-1090 or online at themoneyhour.com. So Tina, are you ready?
I am.
All right. Well, our first guest that we have is Tyler. We mentioned him earlier, Tyler McKinsey with Windermere Real Estate. And Tyler's got kind of an interesting bio I want to touch on real quick. He's the managing broker and one of the top producers at Windermere Real Estate. in the Seattle Green Lake office. Tyler's been in the business for about 12 years, and he's currently the vice president business practices of Seattle King County Realtors. He'll also be serving on the executive committee for Washington Realtors in 2013.
Wow.
He's written a lot about real estate for national outlets such as allbusiness.com, and he teaches ethics to his peers. And he's also been contributing to his local community as he sits on the board. He's the president of the Delridge Neighborhood Development Association, has been from 2010 to 2011. So quite the background. Tyler, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm no longer on the DNDA board. Let's be clear about that.
Oh, okay.
It was a great ride while it lasted.
You can only do so much, right?
I can only do so much. I can only be on four boards at a time, yeah, or whatever it is.
Yeah. Been there,
and
done
sell
that.
Real, yeah, estate. Go figure.
Yeah. So your subject for today, I think, is really interesting, and obviously for our listeners who live in and around the Seattle urban metropolitan area, what is the state of the residential market here in Seattle Metro?
Boy, I kind of want to throw it all out after the great material that you gave us with the last segment.
Do you like the money chat?
I love the money chat. It's all pertinent.
Yeah.
So here's a quick anecdote that I think will really answer that question. Before coming over here, I met with a client who has a house to sell in the Pinehurst neighborhood in Seattle. And I did a comparative market analysis presentation for her today. And one of the data points that we were looking at was available inventory and absorption rate. So numbers of units available and the amount of time that one could expect for those units to be in the market. In her price point in North Seattle, less than half a month, 0.4 of a month.
Wow. Hmm.
I haven't seen inventory levels down to that low level in, probably the course of my career. It's just nuts.
What are some of the factors that you've seen in driving this?
Boy, I think you touched on some of it in the preceding segment. Bottom line, we have this interesting confluence of events in Seattle that sort of sets us apart from a lot of the other markets, mm-hmm, around the country. You talked about foreclosures and delinquent loans. We certainly have those in the Northwest, and we certainly have them in the Seattle area, but not to the extent that we've seen in markets like Florida and California and,
yep,
Nevada. So we have to look at what's going on in Seattle very microcosmically. Really, the bottom line here is we've got a few factors at play. We've got prices that are back to 2004, 2005 norms. But in 2004, 2005, interest rates were at 5.875%.
Mm-hmm. Now we're at... And people thought that was a good rate.
And people, it was historically low.
It was historically low.
Well, today they're, 3.8, 3.5, whatever, mm-hmm, the heck they, mm-hmm, are on any given day. So essentially a buyer who could afford a $300,000 house in 2005 can now afford a $360,000, $370,000 house in 2012. So my buying power has been increased by 20 to 25%.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So now all of a sudden you've got people who have access to the marketplace who have never had access like this before. Frankly, our grandparents were probably the last people who could take advantage of this marketplace, and that was back in 1970, 71. Mm-hmm. You've got teachers and nurses and good sort of middle-income families who have access to inventory that back in 2004, 2005 would have put them in SeaTac and West Seattle and up north in Linwood. And so now everybody's competing for that inventory. Secondly, we've got a lot of investors coming in from around the country, mm-hmm, who recognize that the Seattle market is an appreciating market.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got cash buyers who are literally coming in from across the nation, looking for investment opportunities. We also have first-time buyers who, for the reasons I just laid out, are taking advantage of the marketplace. And lastly, we have all those poor people who were taking advantage of the marketplace in 2004, 2005 with the 0% and the 3% down loans and also the W-2 stated income, mm-hmm, product.
Right. Yep.
Well, they're still living in their houses because they haven't been able to move.
Yep.
Because they haven't seen the market appreciation that they were hoping for. And so whereas the typical move-in, move-up cycle is 5 to 7 years, it's probably now more like 10 to 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got a squeeze, and I don't see it moving anytime soon. Whether you're a jumbo purchaser looking to buy a $1.5 million house, mm-hmm, or somebody getting into the market for the first time at 250, there is just nothing out there, and which is great for sellers. So, mm-hmm, if you do have any equity or you do want to take advantage of a marketplace, now's a great time to be looking at it because there's just so much competition for what you own.
So call to action, if you're listening right now, you're looking at selling your home, it's a great opportunity. If you're looking at buying, being that we're in historical low interest rates, property values are at no question at all-time lows, just not in the near future any major recovery. But now's the time to get in. Pick up the phone, give the show a call, 1-888-776-1090. Again, that's 1-888-776-1090. Or you can reach us online at themoneyhour.com. We will directly connect you with Tyler. The great thing I've mentioned before about doing this show is we really get to have in studio the best of the best in every area regarding financing. Tyler is that in the real estate arena. So again, if you want to connect with them, give us a call.
So Tyler, do you see any trends that are going to be leading to, you know, any sort of big changes coming up?
Boy, I more of the same, only possibly worse. And what do I mean by that? I think the rates of appreciation that we're looking at right now in near North Seattle and central Seattle are probably a little inflated. Because
I was going to say, not real, right?
Well, you know, they're real to me.
I mean, they're real.
They are real. We may see them perhaps slow up or possibly even slide back in the next couple of years simply because we've got this unusually restrictive market. However, counter to that, we've got to look at the macrocosmic economic factors that are at play in Seattle as well.
Mm-hmm.
South Lake Union. Let's look at Amazon, for instance. Amazon has just purchased from Vulcan all of its own headquarters, which is freeing Vulcan, it's giving Vulcan the wherewithal to develop the additional 30 acres of South Lake Union that they have available to them that they haven't tapped into yet. Amazon just purchased the Kleist property portfolio back in, I think it was February of this year. That essentially is yielding another 3 million square feet, 3.1 million square feet in additional office space that they intend to build in, it's either two or three towers. I think it's three towers.
Wow.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is comparable to two Bank of America towers.
Oh my gosh.
So where are all those people going to live?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, some of them are going to rent, but most of them are going to be, given that it's Amazon, likely to be younger with lots of disposable income. They're going to want to live in Green Lake. They're going to want to live in Wallingford and Capitol Hill and Magnolia and Queen Anne and West Seattle.
Right.
And there's nothing for them to buy yet.
Yeah. And Tyler, what about Boeing? Well, Renton and Everett?
Exactly. And Boeing, I have heard rumor, I don't know if this is entirely accurate, but they're adding about 1,500 jobs a month up and down the corridor from Renton to Everett. You know, and these are people who want to take advantage of living in the corridor as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you look at all of those economic factors and you look at, I mean, Amazon building 3.1 additional million square feet, you know, Amazon has all sorts of feeder industry supporting it in the form of, you know, restaurants downtown and and whatever else. This is all drawing people into the city. And we're out of dirt. You know, we've got the strictest development controls of any major metropolitan area in the United States.
So is there, I mean, I know this on the east side in Bellevue because, you know, I live over there, but, you know, and as far as downtown Seattle goes, you know, is Bellevue, there was all these, obviously these huge towers, condominium towers that were built. They ended up not selling.
Right.
And slowly but surely, they started converting into rentals. In around that South Lake Union area, are there any of these, you know, condo high-rise towers that are still sitting somewhat vacant or they've now gone to rentals? And do you think they're going to come back and now try to sell them as, you know, kick the renters out and come back and try to sell these condos? Or are they making a lot of, I would imagine they're making a lot of good money on rents down there. So what do you see? Do you see eventually over the next couple of years actually new condo high rises going up in that area to try to help alleviate that problem of lack of inventory? Or, you know, what's your gut opinion on that?
The answer to all of that is yes.
Okay. So, yeah, that was a long-winded question.
So, you know, currently, by way of example, there are 111 active condo units in Area 701. The MLS is divided into areas across the region, and downtown is referred to as Area 701. So in 701, there are 101 actively listed condos. There are 74 pending in all classes across all price ranges. 101 is nothing.
Wow. Yeah.
To the best of my knowledge, we've got one new building that is currently planned to be built. It's the Insignia. And I don't know how many units, probably somewhere in the 500 to 600 units for that building. There are some that have been converted from condos into apartments. We got a crunch. And, you know, the downside to that is that it's going to drive your cost per square foot up and your market per square foot up. So these things are going to start selling for the ridiculously high numbers that they did before. And I just don't see it. We're seeing more cranes, but we're not seeing enough.
Yeah.
So Long-term answer, people are certainly going to want to be building new condos in downtown Seattle.
Yeah. So since we're talking about our local market right here, let's talk about that new stadium coming in.
Yeah, let's talk about
that. This could be a benefit, right?
It could be a benefit. You know, here's an interesting fact. With that new stadium, we will have the fourth most saturated media market, sports media market in the United States.
What does that mean,
so
Taylor?
It means that whereas we are currently by population about number 22.
Okay.
We're going to essentially be ranked number four in terms of major sports teams and the audiences necessary for those sports teams. So that puts us on par with New York, Chicago, Los Angeles,
wow.
Houston. And we don't have the population base to support that. However, I don't think the bet would be made knowing that we don't have this population base without looking at the math and saying the people that we do have here have money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it simply boils down to a bunch of people who are sports fans, who are you know, making good wages, who have the wherewithal to spend money on going to see the Sounders play,
yeah,
or the new Sonics.
What about other growth, urban growth and improvement projects? What else do you know about going on?
Well, we've got currently we have a moratorium on the small side lot construction that's been taking place. It's been something that's been a bit contentious in Seattle lately. Using Green Lake as an example, there have been some... A developer found a way to develop grandfathered tax lots in a way that was surprising to people. So we saw these little tall skinnies going up on 2,500 square foot lots next to a nice Craftsman, and it became quite a problem. So the city put a moratorium on it. And, you know, we're just going to see there are a lot of developers who are coming into town who are, you know, in addition to those who are already here, who are looking for whatever dirt is available. And, you know, the infill is just, there's not a lot of it mm-hmm. out there.
So, Tyler, Seattle maintains strict urban growth and development guidelines. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Again, it goes back to the age-old problem of not having a lot of dirt. We've got water on one side. We've got mountains on the other. We're not Las Vegas, where we could, you know, you could build and develop as far as the eye could see. We only have so much space, and
yeah.
That will continue to constrain the market. It will continue to put upward pressure on prices. And as long as we've got a population that's increasing and low unemployment, we're going to see upward pressure and appreciation over time.
So what do you think about the SoDo? I mean, what do you think will happen when if and when that stadium comes through and it gets opened and all that activity? Do you see SoDo as being a place where, I mean, it's not really the ideal place you'd want to live now.
Well, I think you've got to look at the zoning, and I'm not sure what the zoning is throughout SoDo. It's largely industrial, so I'm not, you know, presumably variances would have to be put into place to make it residential
yeah.
in some fashion. The bigger question perhaps is, as you look a little further north, what's going to happen when the viaduct comes down?
Mm-hmm.
You're going
mm-hmm.
to have this waterfront mm-hmm. that's going to increase the tax base in a way that I don't think many people are talking about.
That's a whole topic in itself.
It's a whole topic
yeah.
in itself, and it's going to create a quality of life in Seattle that I think really, you know, in terms of comparable cities in this country is second to none.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, Tyler, leaving the listeners with a final opinion, call to action, what would you say?
If you are thinking about selling your house in today's market, it's a safe bet that it's going to sell quickly and probably with multiple offers. If you are looking to purchase, we haven't seen interest rates like this. We haven't seen this affordability matrix since 1971.
Mm-hmm.
Take advantage of it. Yes, it's going to be a headache because there's a lot of competition out there, but it's really not about price today. It's about interest rates, and take advantage of them because we may never see them again.
And that's a good point. Yeah. It's about yeah. the cost overall,
exactly.
Not with the price of the home, but what it cost for you to borrow the money to get the home.
Bingo.
Thank you so much, Tyler,
yeah,
for
thanks, Tyler.
Joining Mike and I in studio.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, look forward to having you back.
Thank you.
And on that note of a call to action, we have our Buyer Power Workshop coming up. If you want to get educated, especially for those first-time home buyers out there or move-up buyers that are looking at the great opportunity for programs, talking about the local market, what we have to offer through Washington State in helping you get into a home, go to themoneyhour.com. You can register right online for our Buyer Power Workshop, which is coming up, Mike, on November...
November 8th.
Yep.
And they better call quick because the reservations...
They are booking up, and we're going to buy them dinner.
Yep, we're buying you dinner. It's at the Coral Restaurant in downtown Bellevue in the Hyatt.
Yeah.
So dinner's on us. And if you're interested in coming by and learning some more about these programs, we'd love to have you. So definitely
call
us. And
it's nice to always get a chance to meet you face to face. I mean,
absolutely.
All the listeners that listen to us on Saturday at 3:00, we'll get to meet them face to face.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
Coming up next on The Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer, you won't want to miss out. Rich Keel with Generation Wealth Partners here in studio to talk about What's Wrong in Wall Street? It's going to be a great segment. Don't miss out. Coming right up next.
Are you behind on your mortgage payments and unsure about the road ahead? Magnum Law Group helps families just like yours navigate through the foreclosure avoidance process. Are you underwater on your home and unsure what to do? Magnum Law Group will help you understand your options. Are you facing foreclosure and need to stop a trustee sale? Magnum Law Group has success in doing this and may be able to help you too. If you're tired of dealing with the banks and getting turned down for loan modification, Magnum Law Group will take on the banks for you and lead you through the process for the best possible outcome. They lead the competition with superior knowledge and expertise.
This is Craig from Magnum. You can reach us at 425-605-6393 or at www.magnumlawgroup.com. See you at the next seminar.
Baseball, the national pastime. It's basic, simple. In a time when, for a lot of Americans, many things are not. Your local Allstate agent can help make things a bit easier by saving you money on car insurance. Right off the bat, safe drivers can save up to 25%. Are you in good hands?
Get big league insurance for less. In Seattle, call Allstate agent Brett Stenmo first. Discount subject to terms and availability. Discount amount subject to change. Actual savings vary. Allstate Fire and Casualty Insurance Company, Northbrook, Illinois.
If what you thought to be true turned out to be wrong, when would you want to know? Generational Wealth Partners has helped many individuals and families just like yours have a revelation about how money really works. Learning and practicing timeless principles that drive your personal economy is the key to controlling your financial life. For a free electronic copy of the most important financial book of this century, please visit www.bankingwithoutbanks.com. Generational Wealth Partners, creating solutions in the absence of certainty.
Hi, this is Rich Keel with Generational Wealth Partners. Please give us a call at 206-718-0303 or find us on the web at www.genwealth.net. That's 206-718-0303.
Now, back to the Money Hour on AM 1090 with your host, Tina Mitchell and Mike Mercer.
Welcome back to the Money Hour with Mitchell and Mercer here on AM 1090 every Saturday at 3 p.m. The purpose of our show is to help our listeners understand what's really going on in our local real estate and financial arena. You can reach Tina and me at 1-888-776-1090 or online at themoneyhour.com. Again, that's 1-888-776-1090 or online at themoneyhour.com. We'd love to hear from you. So, Tina, we have our second guest, and I've known Rich Keel for several years, and Rich has immensely enjoyed independence in the financial and risk management arena since, October of 1985. You've been in this business for a long time. Is a truly independent professional and has traveled the country seeking the best and brightest minds, reserving judgment until compiling all the information possible from all the major different industries and disciplines in the financial services. And he calls it kind of a truly Jerry Maguire experience in his his life, and referring to this as his, you know, his revelation. So, you know, Rich specializes in helping people utilize institutionally based financial strategies and relationships to achieve their maximum potential. And Rich is a registered investment advisor for Generation Wealth Advisors and is also one of the principals. So, Rich, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And I know this is going to be a really good discussion because I really enjoy your angle at things. So,
thank you.
So, what is wrong with Wall Street?
Well, we probably don't have enough time to have that complete conversation, but I would say that one of the biggest issues today is the ability to have access to alternative investments and advice that steers people towards more of a low-risk, high-reward outcome. And most of Wall Street that's developed out of 1971 after Mr. Nixon took us off the gold standard, and we formed the ERISA Act in 1974, which basically created the 401k and the IRA and that sort of thing. And ultimately, ever since, we've been printing money. And so a lot of the problems that ensued, most folks may be too young to remember the SNL crisis that we had in the 80s.
I've heard about it.
Yeah, I was there for that. I was fairly new in the business, scratching my head going, what's going on here? But then ultimately, about 10 years later, I start to see these cycles. In the 90s, we repealed the Glass-Steagall Act, and that was kind of the match that lit the fire for a lot of what's going on in your industry mm-hmm. today. And I just am totally fascinated about monetary policy and government policies that ultimately tend to light these fires that create these problems.
Yeah.
So those are the underpinnings that we like to look at. And just a matter of disclosure, I'd like to share that we have two companies, essentially, Brian and I. Brian's on here on this channel, too. Generational Wealth Partners is more of our risk management division. Generational Wealth Advisors is our registered investment advisory firm. It's fee only. We don't have assets under management, but we spend most of our days and time talking about economic policy. Both of us are extremely fascinated about that. So,
okay. An exciting conversation to have.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. We think it is. I mean, we're pretty boring at parties. But,
I'm sure you're not boring. I'm sure people just want to listen to all of your advice. And on that note, I like having the experience that you do in the industry mm-hmm. and going through these historical times now and what we've seen before. There's always recovery. Mm-hmm. We always follow historical trends. And I think on that note, I just want to say we're going to get out of this. We always do. It's just a matter of how and when. And we all have our own opinions. I would be really interested in yours, Rich, as far as how you see the financial world moving forward.
Well, I feel like I have a pretty unique view of the world. I live part-time in a former communist country where my wife is from, an Eastern Bloc country of Hungary.
Really?
And I've watched the European Central Bank and what's going on with monetary policy there. And most people are aware that the troubles with Greece, Spain, Italy, and Portugal and those countries. In fact, I was there in Spain and Portugal this summer. And there's a lot of pain out there in the world. And there are a lot of issues that are going to have to be worked through because of the weakening of our currency by mm-hmm. the printing of money by governments. And it's going to be an interesting time that we're facing. And so, I mean, there's a lot of political arguments about, you know, who's right, who's wrong. But
sure.
Time will tell. But you see the proliferation of gold buying going on in the mm-hmm. world and people looking for hard assets. I really like real estate a lot. Most of the institutions that I follow, they like real estate, and especially at cheap rates, like mm-hmm. we've been talking about on your show here.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't have a crystal ball. Mine cracked. And
I was just going to ask you, where is it?
Yeah. But no, mine's broken. And so we're going to resort to a Ouija board. No, I'm just kidding.
Hey, Rich, we did talk about Brian. Could you introduce who we have on the phone, your partner?
Oh, yeah. Brian Bewley is my young partner, my protege. I'm extremely proud to work with this. Yeah, we call him Rain Man. I've been excited since the day we met and we started working together, and we talk almost every day, even when I'm in Europe, and talk about what's going on in the world. He's got an amazing background for a young man, and so say hi, Rain Man.
Hi, everyone.
So since he's calling you a young man and you're not here in studio but on the phone, how old are you, Brian?
I just turned the ripe old age of 30.
Wow, you are definitely young.
Just a kid.
Yeah.
So, so what, I don't know if this would go to, this question would be for you or for Brian, but how do you recommend we catch up when people are so far behind? A lot of people are so far behind on kind of the retirement eight ball.
Well, I'll start this and then I'll let Brian finish it. But I think the propensity is for people to feel like they need to gamble and go ahead to the casino and take on even more risk, which has really been a dilemma for a lot of the seniors out there, the savers.
Sure.
The people that really can't afford to go stick their neck out.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of what we teach has to do with helping people transfer the risk to different institutions or partner with institutions that will assume a lot of that risk. Brian, would you like to add anything to that?
Absolutely. I think that it kind of ties back into what you were talking earlier about regarding the 401k market. And everybody has bought into the idea of accumulating money in an account in equities and stocks and bonds. And what you end up finding out is that market is not delivering the results that people need to ultimately retire, however you define it. And so I tend to look at opportunities to create cash flow because, you know, when you look at the relationship between a certain investment and its resulting cash flow, like real estate, and compare that to a speculative investment in the market, you really can't compare the results properly managed, because it's a totally different game. And so you if you look at somebody who has $1 million portfolio and somebody that has a $200,000 portfolio, and both of them have the same level of income generating capability off that portfolio, you have to ask yourself, what's the better strategy?
One of our new clients that said something to me the other day, she's a very successful young real estate investor. It just blew me away. I said, I was joking with her. I said, she's 26. I said, why did you start so late? You know, she already owns a nice portfolio.
So she's out there picking up a lot of real estate.
Yeah. I mean, She just jumped on it. And she's been here on this planet before, I think. But she just had the foresight to say to me about her attorney's been trying to get her into the stock market. And she said, well, how do I hedge a lie? You know,
wow.
And I mean, I'm not,
you
know, I don't want to bash
sure.
people that prefer that market, mm-hmm. but, you know, hard assets are hard assets.
Yeah. So, Rich, you had mentioned high reward, low risk philosophy. Can you explain that in a little more detail for our listeners?
Yeah, it comes from my understanding of risk management and helping people create strategies through the use of the insurance institutions. Brian and I have a process that we teach people and how to use the mutual insurance industry and their backstop.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, annuities to some stockbrokers or other folks that's kind of a dirty word. But if you use those instruments in concert with other financial instruments, there are ways to enhance returns. There's tax efficiencies and so mm-hmm. on. And there's a story I'd like, maybe if we have time, I'll share it about a case that we're working on recently, but,
share it with us.
Oh, well, I have a family friend back east and his mother had, a fluent family. She had about $10 million in the market, knew nothing about her. It's an inherited estate. And her advisor was a bank, a small bank in the community, and they blew through about $6 million because of risk and not curbing her spending. And so anyway, because of some legal action, they're going to get some of that money back. But we had just mentioned or recommended to them, why don't you just ladder some annuities, be guaranteed, and take income for the rest of your life and call it good and have a happy, enjoyable life. So that could be success for some people.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't really have a bias in terms of, or an anti-bias towards any particular tool. Mm-hmm. We try to integrate them all. And so,
but I think a lot of people would be interested, especially in this environment, if you're listening and you want to know more about products that have guaranteed principal and are tax protected from future taxes, pick up the phone, give the show a call, 1-888-776-1090. Again, it's 1-888-776-1090, or you can reach us online at themoneyhour.com. We will directly connect you with Rich, and he can give you all of the details about some great products that are out there that can really protect you in this environment.
So, Rich, you know, you've talked quite a bit about this, and you and I have personally talked about this, but, you know, we finance everything you buy, right?
Right.
Everything gets financed, depending on how you look at it. So tell us about the power of understanding, you know, opportunity costs.
I'd love to. I met a gentleman about 10 years ago who wrote a book called Becoming Your Own Banker, and he's a product of the Mises Institute. And first thing he ever said to me when I met him in his southern voice, he said, you finance everything you buy. And I looked at him and I go, what do you mean by that? Well, when you pay cash for a car or mm-hmm. whatever, you finance it. You give up that which you could have earned.
Yep.
And so that's been the basis for a lot of our work, is helping people analyze, say, mortgages. What's the best, mm-hmm. what's the mortgage choice? Should you do a 15 or a 30-year mortgage? Mm-hmm. What is the actual cost? And what does it mean to you in terms of giving up or taking on the risk that you could push off to the institution? And that's one of the things we get into a great deal is, who's more able to handle the risk, you or B of A? So,
sure.
Brian, this is one of the great aspects of our business, or his performance with spreadsheeting and that sort of thing. That's why I call him Rain Man. So why don't you jump on that a little bit, Brian?
Oh, absolutely. I think most people come to the table with questions about what's the best way to, you know, should I pay down my mortgage? Should I eliminate this or that debt? And what I always have to remind them of is, okay, well, where are you going to get that asset from? Is it coming from a checking or savings account? Is it simply coming from your income? And what if you were to look at the alternative of, you know, saving that money instead of putting it in equity within, you know, whether that's, you know, the house or reducing the balance on a car? We look at alternatives of saving that money in some other financial vehicle and then comparing the interest expense that you're going to incur versus the gain that you're going to experience in whatever asset you allocate that money to. And so when you do that analysis, it's an analysis that most people never consider. And there's a revelation there in that you really don't have to earn nearly as much as you think because of compound interest as what the interest rate is on the note itself. If it's 5 or 6%, you may only have to earn about 2.5% to 3% compounding over time to offset that cost. And when people see these new relationships of money, it changes the, you know, their thinking about what is my best move. And one of the most important aspects of this about where you store your equity is the topic of controlling your assets. Because if you store your money in equity in some other asset like a house or a car, the first person you have to go to when you need access to that money again is your banker.
That's a good point, Brian.
To help people learn how to avoid that.
It makes total sense.
Thanks, Brian.
Wow, what a short period of time for such great information. We absolutely will have to have you back. Rich, thank you so much. Brian, thank you for joining in.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Yeah. Thanks, Brian, for being here.
Thank you, guys.
Yep.
And Mike, what do we have exciting coming up next week for our listeners?
Well, Tina, next week we have two guests, Angela Hardy with Prudential Northwest Realty, and a gal named Eleanor Grace, who owns a company called Get Ready List. And she's doing some amazing things with this company. It's going to be a great show. This is Mike Mercer signing off for the Mortgage Diva, Miss Tina Mitchell.
That's me. And this is Tina Mitchell signing off for the Mortgage Master, Mike Mercer. Thank you again, everyone, once again for being here on Saturday, right here, AM 1090. Come back again next Saturday, 3 p.m. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Thanks.
Thanks, guys. Have a great week.